It doesn't have to be an actual authority. Like, they have no power over you, really, but you give them that power.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. On today's episode of the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I am speaking to Mari Järvinen. Mari Järvinen has been on the podcast so many times. She could be my co-host for all of our bias episodes, but she's an organizational psychologist and consults companies on all things assessments in recruitment, workplace culture, you name it, she does it. Today, we're going to talk about authority bias. We're going to talk about how it's quite a subtle bias, but a very prominent one. It runs the gamut from marketing to social proof to doctors to recruitment, which is exactly what we're going to center the conversation on. We're going to talk about all of the elements and aspects of the recruitment process where authority bias plays a role, how dangerous it can be, so the effect of it. We're talking about the strategic level, hiring decisions, candidate information and CVs, and also references. And then we're also going to ask ourselves the question, isn't it that there is authority for a reason? And is that not a good thing to listen to someone who knows more than you? And Mari has some very interesting thoughts on that. And she's also going to share quite some practical tips on how to minimize the impact of authority bias on the recruitment process at every stage. So without further ado, I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome, everyone. Today, I am lucky enough to welcome again Mari Järvinen. I'm so happy to have you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Today, we are covering yet another bias. Shocker, there's a few more left. We have a few more episodes that we can cover new biases. Today is authority bias, what we're going to cover today. I won't go into too much detail just yet. Mari has been on the podcast with me for quite a few episodes already. But in case you are a new listener and you haven't heard about Mari and what she does, I would love for you to quickly introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Sure. So my name is Mari and I am from Finland. I live in Finland at the moment as well. I'm an organizational psychologist, and that basically means that I deal with all sorts of things that have to do with workplaces and people and work and interactions in the workplace and all sorts of things around that sphere. And I also do assessments for recruitment, and I have done that for many, many years. And I think that it's fun always to be on these podcasts. I think this is my fifth time to talk about what could go wrong. And of course, we won't be only talking about the recruitment process, but they are so important. We are also biased, and it's good to be able to talk to you about these things that we should be very much aware of when we hire people and build our processes for that.
Yeah. So you do cover a lot more than just biases on this podcast. Good to mention that you have a lot of expertise in other areas related. But you're definitely an expert that I would always call in if we talk about making recruitment less biased, looking at, okay, what can exactly go wrong? And well, today's no different. I already mentioned it in the intro that we're going to talk about authority bias. It sounds like quite a transparent one. Authority rings a bell, I think, for most people. Could you give us a definition of what authority bias actually is?
Yeah, so a simple definition of it is that we tend to perceive the opinions of people that we see as authorities as more believable or accurate or powerful than those of others. And then we're more influenced by those opinions as well. And this doesn't have to do with the content of what they're saying. It's just that the position of power kind of gives them some sort of legitimacy that we perceive in our head when we listen to someone talk. And this often happens without critical thought. So it doesn't go through any kind of processing, like, why am I believing this? But it just happens in our head.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, I immediately had a follow-up question around, as you say, it doesn't really have to do with the content. Does that mean that then if you say someone's in a position of authority, is it really completely, what's the word, disconnected from what their expertise might be in? Or does it have some sort of link still?
Yeah, so of course there are experts who are actually very much experts in their fields and that we should be listening to. And this is also what makes it a little bit tricky, because authority bias is also probably something that has helped us survive. It has helped us get ahead and build societies, because if we think about it traditionally, it has been the most, like, the elder person or the more most knowledgeable person or some sort of leader that we've been obeying or listening to. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So this is also what makes it a little bit tricky. It's not always that they're saying something that's wrong. It's just the bias comes when we don't critically think about, is this an actual expert? And why should I be listening to this person's opinion about this?
Yeah. Do you have maybe off the top of your head a very tangible example of how this could manifest? Aside from the recruitment process, because mm-hmm. I want to get to that in a yeah. moment.
Oh, yeah. I think we are all influenced by people who are using this to their advantage, and that's marketing. If you've ever heard a celebrity promote a product or seen an ad where somebody is saying, hey, I have used this and you should too, that's a way that marketing uses that as, hey, you are like me, and this makes me an authority to tell you, hey, I've tried this out and you should too. So this is where it comes in everyday life, where we see these ads, for example. And then also doctors, if we go to a hospital, there are actually studies we're much more likely to believe a person who is dressed in a white lab coat than we are to believe a person who comes and wears a sweater, even though it might be the same doctor. So that's also a typical one.
That means that authority bias is much more subtle in its appearance than what the name might suggest. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned with your example about marketing, I don't think that everyone would put that example immediately and tag it to authority bias, whereas the doctor one, for sure, I would mm-hmm. Immediately think of. Preparing for this episode, I definitely thought about, okay, where does it manifest in my own life, or where can it sort of an everyday example? Definitely doctors. Politicians mm-hmm. is an that easy too. One, even if they might not even have the expertise about what they're speaking about, but they do have authority in our societal structure. So then mm-hmm. that has some standing. But that also gives us sheds a bit of light on the fact that it doesn't necessarily have to be, how would you call it, universally recognized expertise or authority in a specific industry, mm-hmm. but it could be your average Instagram influencer mm-hmm. who just recommends something and you fall prey to that recommendation just because you might trust that person.
Mm-hmm. You Is might that trust correct? That person, or yeah, that you might trust that person, or you might think that, oh, I want skin like hers, or I really like this person's style, or they've done great things in their life, and people aspire to be like their idols and kind of the influencers that they follow, or that's often the case. So that in people's minds make them more believable. So, okay, so here's the skin cream. You can look like me. So that's where that can come from. It doesn't have yeah. to be an actual authority. Like, they have no power over you, really, but you give them that power.
As I was writing up a list of where authority bias comes into play in recruitment, I had a few on my list. Could mm-hmm. you quickly give us an overview and then we'll go into each one?
Yeah, so it can come to play in many different situations. Obviously, the recruitment process is something that's designed by someone. And in a company, there's often one person or a few people who just decide how to set up a recruitment process. Where do we advertise this job? How do we interview? How do we select people and so on? And this can obviously be one big big part where it comes in. And I know we'll go into more detail about these things. But then also, of course, the decisions. How do we decide? Who gets to decide? Whose opinion weighs in the most when we decide which people move through the funnel, and then also who gets the job in the end? But not only that, it's only also the other side. What do we look at when we look at candidates? How do they present themselves, and how do they use this authority bias to kind of get ahead the game in the process? That can be something. And then also references is a typical one. Who do we list as our reference? Or if we don't list them when asked, who do we say, like, yeah, call my former supervisor, they're the head of something, or is it my colleague, or what do we say there? So those are four situations where at least those are very much influenced by this.
Yeah, these are probably the most prominent ones that come to mind. There might be a few more. Maybe also if you look at, okay, what assessments, what skills do we look at, that might also on a more granular level. Yeah. Might also be something that if we have time, we can cover that as well. I'd love to jump back to the strategic level. As you mentioned earlier on, someone needs to design a recruitment process. Someone makes the decision about what that looks like.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about how authority bias slots into that and why that might be dangerous.
So at least one way that could happen is that if we know that senior management or the CEO or whoever has a preference for certain types of individuals, we might either consciously or subconsciously design the process so that those kinds of individuals advance through the process. They might have even said out loud that don't send me people who don't have X or who have X attributes. And then even if we think that's completely irrelevant to the job, or something else might be a better fit for the job or the company, we might tend to go for those because it's just easier for us a little bit to like, okay, so here's these candidates that you wanted to see. So that's one way that can definitely happen. Just the first example that came to mind.
Yeah, it's a good example because it also, I think, highlights that authority bias can be very implicit. You just assume that someone might, or as you say, could be very explicit in the way that the CEO or whoever sits on top even says out loud, well, this is what I'm looking for. Don't send me these people. Mm-hmm. But it can be very implicit.
And the other one that comes to mind is when you said assessments as well. This is something I've actually heard from senior management many times when they're hiring for leadership positions. Like, and I don't want any cognitive ability tests for these people. You know, this level people, they've already proven themselves. We don't need to put them through that. That's another typical situation that actually happens quite a bit.
Which then is sort of a twofold authority bias, right? Then you get the authority bias from the person who says it, and then also again from sort of that acumen that a candidate might bring in that they might not even need a cognitive assessment.
Yeah,
because they've proven themselves enough. Very interesting. I see that there's a lot of complexity to the subject, which doesn't make it easier to spot when it comes up. Do you, in that strategic level, do you see that there are specific dynamics that trigger that a lot? Or is it more so built into a structure of a company that there is bound to be some sort of authority bias in terms of designing a recruitment process?
I think it's very much a question of like, what kind of culture do you have in the company? Like, have you built it around hierarchies? Like, is hierarchy something that's important to you? That's one question I would ask. Like, if it looks like senior management can just put their foot down and nobody else can say anything, then that's a really good breeding ground for authority bias, because then people aren't going to question senior management. But then also what kind of things we value in general in the company.
Well, then let's step one step down and go to the hiring decision, sort of zooming into the process.
Yeah.
How does authority bias then play into hiring decisions?
So I think it can come in many ways, but it depends really a little bit about on how the process is structured. But let's say there's a panel interview, for example, and in the panel there's somebody from senior management, and then there's other people, and then we can tell that the senior manager really likes some candidate. We might start favoring that candidate and be more kind to them because we don't want to go against the person we perceive as an authority, for example. So there might be bias against the candidate already in that way. Or it could be a good bias as well for that candidate. Like they might get viewed more favorably or worse, depending on what the senior manager thinks, or it doesn't actually even have to be a senior manager, but the person of authority in that situation. So that's one way. But it could also happen earlier. If we think about, I'm sure you have all seen CVs or LinkedIn profiles that say X something something on their profiles, X Netflix or X Google or X Facebook or something like that. That's actually, they're playing into the authority bias, because they are thinking that, okay, so because I have been at this company, it gives me this prestige that people will see me as more competent than if I had worked somewhere else. So people are using that. And people are also putting, if they took one course at Harvard, they put that on their LinkedIn. And it looks like they went to Harvard because that's another authority, kind of a prestige thing that people put on their profile. So these are things that also candidates use in the selection process. Like, here's how I can be an authority, even mm-hmm. when I might not be.
It's sort of by proxy that they mm-hmm. use an educational institution of renowned or a big company that has mm-hmm. a certain reputation as a means to boost themselves up. Mm-hmm. I was laughing because I've seen that a lot on LinkedIn, and I think it's a very common practice to do that. But even in probably job interviews, when people are asked to sort of introduce themselves, what they've done, they're mm-hmm. probably very likely to highlight things that trigger authority bias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
They could be name dropping. They would say who they worked with and who they know, that kind of thing, and it's not that they shouldn't. Of course, they can do this, but as interviewers and recruiters, we should be very aware that this triggers this bias, and we might not be looking at the candidates objectively. And then the problem, of course, is that if we are very biased in these decisions, like who moves forward in the process, then we might be ruling out a lot of people who never had a chance to get those credentials. They might not have had a chance to get that education or go to those schools or know those people. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't be great at the job at hand. So that's where the bias can be very harmful as well, because if we don't become conscious of it, then we can rule out people who we actually might need to hire.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it becomes a conversation of privilege as well, right? Mm-hmm. Have you grown up with enough privilege, or do you, from any different dimensions of diversity, have enough privilege to have been able to work at Google, for example, or have mm-hmm. been able to take a course at Harvard, as you say? Then that becomes a whole other discussion around that. I realize I didn't ask you what the dangers would be if there is authority bias on a strategic level. Maybe you can enlighten us really quickly.
Well, I think it maybe between the lines is that the if there's too much reliance on senior management and other authorities, if we don't critically think about it, we might end up with a very, very skewed kind of recruitment process that doesn't actually find out the things that we need to find out about the candidates and doesn't actually work towards matching people with the jobs that they need to be doing, and instead end up advancing candidates who are not fit for the job but could be great buddies for the senior manager who just wants to go golfing with people, you know, and that's irrelevant for most jobs. So that's the main danger. Like, we might actually hire the wrong people if we blindly rely on these kinds of authorities who might not have the right kind of criteria for why they're recommending someone and not recommending someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. And then obviously you can, with authority bias then really impacting the way that a process is set up, then you in the end probably don't even know anymore why everything's going wrong because you blindly followed a decision that was made somewhat uneducatedly or sort of not having been researched at all potentially. So then defining or pinpointing where in your recruitment process are the bottlenecks for, say, inclusivity, diversity, then it's really hard to figure that out, I assume.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And it's not only the senior management. It's like, it could be, like we talked about in the beginning, the authorities that we might listen to might be someone we read a blog on LinkedIn who said you should do your hiring process like this. And then we don't actually go and check, like, is there any scientific proof for this? Or is this just this person's opinion? Or what are we actually looking at? So I think there's a lot of risk of just going a lot of wrong directions with the hiring process.
Yeah, that's really good that you point that out, because also my brain always goes to, well, it must be the decision maker that then really influences everything and then everything goes awry. But it can be as insidious as a blog, an opinion piece on the internet that really informs how decisions are made and how processes are structured. That's a really, really good piece to point out. I want to go back to the, well, CV or candidate information, depending on how that's collected. You mentioned educational institutions. You mentioned employers, former employers. It sounds like it's very closely connected, that form of authority bias, to the halo and horns effect.
Yeah.
Would you say so? Yeah.
Yes. It's definitely very close to that, because it can go either way. It can lead us to favoring some people, and it can lead us to not liking some people for pretty random reasons. Yeah. And so very, very close to that. And also stereotyping bias.
Of course.
What do we perceive? What is our stereotype? What is the image in our heads when we get the ex-Google written on the CV? What does that bring to mind? If we used to work at Google and it was horrible, that might be bad for the candidate. But if we used to work there, or if we think of them as some sort of authority, then it might be a good thing. So it could go either way.
Yeah. Good to note as well at this point that we have an episode on the halo and horns effect. If you're listening to right now and you haven't heard that one, please go back after this, finish this episode first, and then go back to the halo and horns effect and stereotyping bias. Also an important one to cover. On the topic of CVs or candidate information, you mentioned references. That might be already on the CV, or it might be mentioned afterwards who to call to double check. How do references intersect with authority bias?
They intersect in many ways. So one of them might be that, because some people put the references already on their CV or in their cover letter, like, talk to these people. So they might be calling out kind of the authority bias, like, hey, I know the CEO on such and such company, and this is this person can recommend me. So that they're trying to use that in their favor. Or if there's even a letter of recommendation from somebody, that could be perceived as an authority. And that's not always wrong. It can be useful information that, okay, so somebody really respected in the field has worked with this person and says good things about them. But then you need to kind of double check with yourself. Do these people know relevant information about this person? If this person were thinking about hiring, for example, worked as an expert, as a team member with this person, and they are now interviewing for a leadership position, the person of authority might not know anything about what they're like as a leader. So it's like, okay, so then it might be a testament to good character, but for this specific position, they might not have any authority. So kind of, this is what we need to kind of check for, that we don't just assume that their authority is on everything just because they're really high up in something else.
On the topic of authority, while we introduced it, I think you already mentioned a little bit, but I want to ask you again. There might be people out there thinking, well, there's authority for a reason. right? Mm-hmm. It might be mm-hmm. because of experience, merit, knowledge, standing, what have you. Is it so bad to listen to someone who is a figure of authority?
No, not in general. It's just a question of when are we listening to them and why are we listening to them on this specific topic? And what kind of authority are we giving them in this situation? So, for example, in a hiring process, if you as a recruiter don't know anything about the job that you're hiring for, then maybe you do need someone to help you out with that. So let's say you're hiring a developer and there's a type of code that you need to test. If they actually know how to do, if you need it from day one, this is not something you can spend weeks learning, but you need to know it now because we need someone for that role. Then having an experienced developer from your company maybe look at the code that this person is writing, totally fine. Use that expertise. But that's the limitation of kind of what they should be looking at. So we need this authority for this kind of thing, and then they can give that input. Totally, absolutely fine. So yeah. that's an important point. But even with that, I would say it's important to evaluate whether or not you need to have every skill from day one, because this is another thing that we often think, that we need to find someone who already knows these 15 things and has this many years of experience and from these kinds of jobs and this kind of school and everything. So I think it's important to kind of critically evaluate even that. Is this actually necessary, or would it be enough to have really good learning abilities and then be able to pick it up super quickly? So that's something to think about as well.
Yeah, good point. And it really goes into my next question, so I'm not going to even comment much on what you just said, but I'm going to ask you, how else do you then minimize the impact of authority bias? You mentioned a bunch of things already throughout our conversation. Could mm-hmm. you give us sort of a short list of what works best?
So I would say, thinking about the recruitment process kind of outside the scope of any given hiring process would be an important thing. Kind of, how do we standardize this? How do we make sure that we are checking for bias? How do we look at, okay, we are hiring for a developer, what kind of expertise do we need to have to be able to judge whether or not somebody knows the job well enough? And then figure it out so that the set of questions, the set of tasks, whatever the candidates go through, for example, are the same for everyone, and check for authority bias. Like, why is this? Why are we putting this kind of part of the process into it? So that's super important. It could also be a good idea to remove some of these identifiable details. Like, if you need to hire a doctor, it is important that they actually have a medical degree, because we can't hire someone who doesn't have that. But is it important for us to know which school they went to or where they got that degree? That could be something to think about. Just kind of questioning that part as well. Having the panels or whoever your selection committee is kind of be more diverse, so that you can have diverse voices and figure out how to get those voices heard as well. So it's not just the senior management or whoever we perceive as authority who gets a say. Kind of maybe weighted voting systems of, like, how do we then select if we have candidates that are similar in characteristics? Obviously training, always being very aware of where this bias can come in and how it relates to the counter arguments, like the one you just said. Like, isn't it good to listen to people who know more than we do? Like, yes, but you need to think about when you listen to them and what they actually know about. So kind of having these self-checks is super important.
That's a great one. And I was going to bring that up because you started that overview of where authority bias comes into play in recruitment with those mm-hmm. really specific questions. And I think those questions can already check you on authority bias really well. Mm-hmm. Who influences the decision-making process in setting up a recruitment strategy or process? Who makes the hiring decision? Based on what merits are they in the discussion, or do they have a lot of weight in that discussion? Mm-hmm. And then again, what are we focusing on in candidate information? I think that was also a brilliant question to ask, where it might become very clear all of a sudden that you're focusing, you're just scanning for those name drops. You're scanning mm-hmm. for the references of names that you could recognize. So then that might check you quite well for those subtle biases, because as we mentioned in the beginning, that authority yeah. bias might be harder to detect.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't mention directly, but I think it deserves to be said, is kind of using objective tools, like assessment tools, psychometric tools, like the cognitive ability. That is one of the most powerful predictors of success. And even though there are some people who find it uncomfortable, that's based on science. So kind of finding these ways of measuring things that are not reliant on these kind of outside influences of authority or our perception of authority. So that's also very important.
Yeah, that's a good one. Even though we're already over time, I really want to get to that question around assessments and authority bias. Mm-hmm. I'd love to really quickly get your two cents on, okay, how do these connect and what exactly we're looking at?
So that's a big question. I don't know if we have time for the whole conversation, but I think it really comes in, like, what kind of tools do you use? Are they scientifically validated, or are they the ones that are marketed the hardest? And are you using the right tools for the right in the right way? Are they measuring what you actually want to measure, or is it somebody's gut feeling who happens to be in a position of authority? So kind of also a critical review of all your assessment tools and methods would be a very important thing.
Yeah.
Just as a very simple answer to that.
Maybe in a few weeks or months, we can have a follow-up conversation about authority bias and how assessments play into that. I think that would be a wonderful follow-up if and when we have time for that. With that being said, thank you again for your list of tips. I think that those were hugely insightful, very practical as well. And I want to thank you again for joining me on this conversation. This was, definitely a few learning moments in here, how subtle authority bias, but also how insidious it can get.
Yeah.
And I hope that, our listeners took away a lot from it. I hope that you enjoyed it, most of all. You've been on here.
It's always fun.
More often than we can count on one hand, almost. For everyone who listened today, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Please let us know what your main takeaways were from this one, what you learned. Please also reach out to Mari, maybe connect with her on LinkedIn. Lots to share on LinkedIn, lots of expertise that she has over there. If need be, please reach out to her. I know she's very busy, but there's always a time to help out in any way that she can, I'm sure. And please reach out to me if you have any questions or guest recommendations of who we should have on next, which bias to cover next. And I hope to see you on the next one. Thank you again, Mari, and goodbye.
Thank you.